that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, and they just disagree on how.
We're going to get across that wasteland, and we're going to do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's Friday, September 30th, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, the Guardians won for the second straight night in comeback fashion, defeating the Tampa Bay Rays 2-1 with Stephen Kwan and Oscar Gonzalez coming up with RBI hits in the eighth inning, and Trevor Stephan hanging on for dear life in the ninth to get the save. The Guardians take 2 out of 3 against Tampa Bay in what could be a playoff preview series. We might see the Rays back here again in 1 week. That has yet to be determined, and we'll talk about playoff matchups later. But just off the top, last night's game had a little bit of everything, and it got the blood flowing there at the end.
Yeah, it was. The Guardians were basically, shut down for 7 innings by Jeffrey Springs and one inning of relief by Sean Armstrong. You know, they're down 1-0, and but they come back in the eighth inning with 2 runs, and the guy that kind of has led them all year, Stephen Kwan, has the big double, to drive in a tying run. And then another rookie, Oscar Gonzalez, hits 180 feet, maybe not even 80 feet, off the first baseman's glove and scores, scores Kwan for the game winner. It's, it's crazy to watch these guys play. They are just, everything is down to the wire. It seems last at bat. They've won 9 out of 10, Joe, and 20 of their last 24 games.
Yeah, and everybody sort of had the same reaction when Gonzalez hit that little squibber off the end of his bat, and Jose Ramirez went first to third after being intentionally walked, and the go-ahead run scored from third base with Kwan. Everybody had pretty much the same reaction. This is Guardians baseball. This is their brand of baseball. This is what they do. They don't hit the ball out of the park all that often. They do play for 3 or 4 hits an inning and trying to scratch out runs that way. But like you said, in close games at the end, comeback wins, 1-run games, these guys are learning how to win that way. And as wonderful as that is for this season, and it's produced a division championship and a spot in the playoffs and, this great momentum that they've got going on right now, this can only be good for, the future for a long time. These young kids on this roster, 24, 25 years old right now, are learning and experiencing how to win in these situations. And it can only, benefit this club in years to come.
Yeah, definitely. These guys are learning on the job and learning how to win, in the most pressure-filled situations. They are 29-11 in their last at bat this year, Joe. And those 29 wins—that's an ongoing club record. The old record was held by the 1995 Indians. And you think of those guys, Tomy and Ramirez, and those guys, and Albert Bell hitting walk-off home runs. These guys don't hit walk-off home runs, and they're still winning in their last at-bat, but they do it like they did last night by, you know, a double, you know, a sacrifice bunt, an infield hit. It's you know, it's the same song, but kind of with a different singer.
Yeah, it's the 95 club would clobber you to death, and you get the walk-off home runs from Albert Bell, from Manny Ramirez, and all those guys. But these guys, like you've said it a bunch of times before, it's a death by a thousand paper cuts. It's the slashes and the you know, the opposite field double for Stephen Kwan, and the infield hit for Ahmed Rosario a bunch of times this year. It's been fun to watch. It's been exciting, but boy, in the press box, how many times do we have to rip up the leads to stories and reverse things when it looked like this team was going to lose games? Cal Quantrill comes out, his streak of what, 33 starts or 32 or 33 starts at Progressive Field without a loss on the line, and by some miracle every time this offense gets him off the hook when he leaves the game trailing. He only gave up one run, and at one point I think he had retired 16 out of the last 17 batters that he faced. So just really exciting to see Quantrill dominate that way after he gave up one run, and then he sort of locked in. He was hard on himself after the game. He said, you know, I didn't put the team in position to win, but he certainly didn't do anything to cause their loss.
Yeah, you give up one run in the first inning and then, you know, shut them down for what's through the sixth inning. You're doing your job. And they just couldn't score off Springs. That the Tampa Bay lefty was really, really tough on them. He's won, you know, he's been on a roll too. So you could see why, you know, he's going to be an important part of you know, that the last nine games for the Rays and probably going into the postseason.
Yeah, Tito said that his fastball had good life. It was getting past the Guardians hitters' barrels, and then he had an excellent changeup that he was throwing yesterday that was really fooling the Guardians batters. I guess that's one thing that Cleveland has always had a lot of trouble with is a lefty who has a really good changeup. The right-handed hitters in Cleveland's lineup have struggled with that. But, you know, they sort of lay dormant. They sort of, you know, pick their spots where they can try to get on base there. And it winds up being the rookie Will Brennan who comes up and sort of just clears his head, clears his mind, gets the leadoff single to set things up in the eighth inning. And then, you know, it's Stephen Kwan coming through after Miles Straw lays down the sacrifice bunt.
Yeah, that's three rookies in that inning get the big hits. And, you know, that's if you, you know, I just didn't see that the way that, you know, the way that ninth inning played out, the eighth inning played out. You know, when you go back to the start of the season, you know, you're not picturing three rookies getting big hits in a pretty big game, a game that could, you know, be a, you know, kind of, you know, a harbinger of the wild card, the three game wild card series. And these guys came through, and you know, it's been rookies and rookies and rookies this season. And Joe, there's a stat that Stephen Kwan in September has reached base 52 times. Mm-hmm. That's the most by a Cleveland rookie since Max Alvis, I believe, in 1963. I mean, this guy, Joe, I mean, we've talked about him as the rookie of the year, but I think this guy should get some down ballot votes for the MVP.
Well, I
don't think they're are they here without him?
The question that I want to pose at some point, and that will make a really good topic here, is Stephen Kwan the Guardians MVP? Is Stephen Kwan the entire difference for this team? Well, we know who Jose Ramirez is, and we know what Jose Ramirez does and what he means for this club and what he contributes. But I think you're exactly right. I don't think they're in this position at all if Stephen Kwan doesn't come along, solidify the top of that lineup, and not just, you know, solidify and give it consistency, but production. He's just produced over and over again, not just in, you know, leadoff type situations, but in clutch situations, coming back around late in games. How many times have we seen him drop doubles on the line, left field and right field, in clutch at bats in huge games to produce wins for this team? Stephen Kwan has something in that clutch gene, I think, that, you know, is so elusive and so you know, hard to define. We've seen other guys in the lineup step up, like Andrés Giménez, like Oscar Gonzalez, but I don't think any of those guys get those opportunities if Stephen Kwan isn't doing what he's done all year long.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, when he went into the stands in Seattle at T-Mobile Field and kind of, you know, like slid out of the stands and looked like he really seriously hurt himself, I thought that was the season. You know, that's how big an impression this guy has made on me, and I think on the whole ball club. I thought that was kind of, if he had been seriously injured, I thought, you know, this season's going the other way, because, you know, he means that much to this team. So you know, he's had an incredible rookie year and just really helped them in every phase of the game.
Yeah. So the question is, Stephen Kwan the Guardians MVP? I think that's a legit question. I don't think it's just some sort of like, you know, fluff thing. I think you can dive down into the numbers and compare them to, you know, Jose Ramirez, to compare them to Emmanuel Clase or Shane Bieber or anybody else on the roster. But, you know, pound for pound, war, anything like that, I think he compares favorably to anybody on this roster in an MVP discussion. Now, would he receive votes in the overall American League MVP race? What do you get? You get 10 votes in that ballot, right? Right, homies?
Yeah.
There's 10. Throw him a down ballot vote, maybe. Sure, yeah, definitely. I think we know who the top of that ballot is. We know who the one and probably the two are right now. I mean, hell, Shohei Ohtani just went out and shoved 8 innings of two hit ball with something like 14 strikeouts the other night. So I think Ohtani has pretty much solidified his place behind Judge. But you know, Kwan, can you imagine 6'7" Aaron Judge and 6'5" Shohei Ohtani standing next to, what, 5'9" Stephen Kwan?
Yeah, you know,
make a pretty nice graphic there if you put it up on the scoreboard.
Yeah, it'd be like that picture of Judge and Altuve standing at second base.
Yeah.
There's that great picture. You know, Altuve comes up to his waist and they're talking to each other. I thought that, you know, that's what it would look like. You know, Joe, the thing that jumped out at me is when we were talking to Brennan after the game, and he said, I think you asked him, does anything he do surprises you? And Brennan said, this is the same. He's doing the same things in the big leagues that he was doing in the Arizona Rookie League when we were playing the Cincinnati Reds, you know, at 7:30 at night, because during the summer, because it was so hot, you couldn't play it during the day. It was 110 degrees in Arizona, so they had to play at night in the lowest of low, you know, kind of level of baseball. And Kwan was doing that same thing there that he's doing in the big leagues.
Yeah, that was an interesting response from Will Brennan to, you know, for the guys who have been on this ride with him through the minors and seen him, you know, produce, they kind of know, they've known all along that this is what he can do. And now to see him doing it at the big league level is a whole nother ball game. Can he do it in the playoffs? Can he do it when a loss means more than just a loss during the regular season? That remains to be seen. And I can't wait until Friday. I can't wait until he steps into the box on Friday. But, you know, the great thing about that is the first two or three games of it will be at Progressive Field, will be at home where he's comfortable, where he's used to being in left field And I think that has a big plus for Cleveland, is that those first two or three games will be in their park and give these rookies, and especially Stephen Kwan, some degree of comfort starting out.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, the home field advantage, they've won that because they won the division. You know, they earned that, and hopefully they make it work for them.
Okay, we'll get into matchups here in a moment. I just wanted to mention really quickly Trevor Stephan and the ninth inning roller coaster that he went on. He was one pitch away from blowing a save with his fourth walk of the game. At that point, it was interesting. He came back and sort of wiggled out of it when Andrés Giménez made the running catch against Jose Siri. What did you take away from Stephan's performance in a spot where, you know, he's not necessarily used to it? He's worked his way into being one of these high leverage guys in the back end of Francona's bullpen. Obviously, Emmanuel Clase had been used back to back nights, and you're trying to get him as much rest as possible for the postseason and the playoffs. Stephan stepped into that role and just sort of gutted it out, and you know, he didn't have his best stuff, but he managed to get through it.
Yeah, you know, and you're gonna have to have those kind of performances. You know, Class A, as much as we've talked about, you know, he cannot pitch every night. I mean, the Guardians may hold a different opinion of that, but from the outside looking in, this guy needs a day off now and then. So, you know, Stephan is going to have to, you know, step into that role. Sam Hankins is going to have to step into that role from time to time. You know, there's a bunch of other guys that, you know, we've seen Brian Shaw in that role. So, you know, those guys are going to have to pick up the slack when you know, Class A is pitched two or three days in a row, and you're trying to save, you know, save his arm for the postseason. You know, and, you know, I mean, Stephan, you know, was, you know, he walked the tightrope, you know, over the shark tank, but he got it done. And he walked the bases loaded with one out and then came back and got two straight outs. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's all that counts. You got the save, you nailed it down, and you move on to the next day.
Yeah, third save of the season, fourth of his career for Stephan. And, you know, and he knew he got away with one. I think when we were talking to him after the game, standing in front of his locker, he said he lost the zone there for a little bit. The splitter, you know, wasn't there, but he relied on the slider and came back, and it was effective. He did a real nice job, you know, just escaping and holding things together. All right, matchups. The loss for Tampa Bay actually stopped them from having an opportunity to clinch there at Progressive Field. As we took the elevator down to the clubhouse level, we looked to our right as we were getting off, and they were balling up the wall of plastic sheeting that had been hung up in Tampa Bay's locker room, and they had just sort of pulled it down off the walls to protect it from the champagne celebration that was about to happen when Kwan hit the double and Gonzalez gave him the lead. They very quickly, it was all reminiscent of the 97 World Series Game 7, where it was, you know, hurry up and take down the plastic because there's no celebration.
Move the World Series trophy out of the Cleveland locker room.
Yeah, as some people here were witness to that activity. But, you know, Cal Quantrill put it best, I think. And he wasn't saying anything to sort of demean Tampa Bay. He was very complimentary of the club, but he said, you know, we don't want anybody clinching in our house. We don't want anybody celebrating in our locker rooms. And they did. They hung on and they came back and won to prevent that from happening. Now, what that does do, you know, Tampa Bay and Seattle have magic numbers right now of one, so they are both pretty much in for the postseason. I mean, it's just going to take some sort of miraculous happening over the last six games of the season for both of those clubs not to make it. But I would say those are the matchups. Who do we want to see here? Who do we prefer to see here? And, you know, who's most likely to be here back here on Friday to face the Guardians?
Well, you know, you're right, Joe. You know, Toronto clinched yesterday. They clinched a wild card spot. The order, I guess, is still up for grabs. But, you know, Tampa Bay is, to me, probably is the best matchup for Cleveland. And right now, if the postseason started today, they play the Rays. And the Rays are in a tough spot. They missed, like you said, they missed clinching last night. Now they've got to go to Houston. And then they've got to go to Boston. So they end the season on the road. And then if it is Cleveland, then they've got to come to Cleveland. So this is a heck of a long road trip for them. And, you know, that's got to kind of wear them down a little bit. And, you know, the Guardians have played them very well. I mean, there's been close games. But they won the season series 4-2. But right now, you know, I think that maybe that's the most favorable matchup. Seattle, of course, you know, kind of went 6-1 against Cleveland during the regular season, kind of beat them up a little bit. And I don't think it can beat Toronto at this point, but, you know, the Guardians went 5-2 against Toronto.
Yeah, I like matchups wise. I would have liked what Toronto presented. I still think that the Guardians can handle Tampa's lineup a little bit better than, let's say, Seattle's lineup. I think Seattle's lineup has a little bit more pop to it, especially when Julio Rodriguez is healthy. So I think the matchup is pretty good. It calls for another, you know, a couple more 4-hour games between Cleveland and Seattle if they come down to it with the way those bullpens pitch and the way they're used. So, you know, look for that. Look for and I guess the matchup that we've sort of been watching too is Kevin Cash versus Terry Francona. You know, Tito said it would be hard. It would be difficult taking on Cash in the playoffs because this is a guy that he loves. It's one of his best friends, and you never want to, you know, send a guy home for the season if he's somebody who you're fond of.
Yeah, and you know, I know friendship. Hopefully, friendship ends between the white lines after you step over the white lines. You want to win, you know, and I think you know, those guys are good enough friends where, you know, they know the business they chose, and you know, there's always a winner and a loser in this game. So, you know, one guy wins, one guy loses, and you still stay friends. And I think, you know, like you were saying, Joe, I like the Rays matchup, I guess. You know, I think Seattle, you know, with Luis Castillo and Robbie Ray, you know, we saw a bunch of those guys in those, you know, those six games against Cleveland, and they both pitched very well. So would they, you know, could Cleveland's bats handle those guys in the postseason? I don't know.
Yeah, and on the other side, at Tampa side, you've got Corey Kluber and Shane McClanahan, you know, who would Cash want to throw in a 3-game series against Cleveland coming out? You've even got Tyler Glass now at some point that you might see, you know, maybe coming out of the bullpen.
Yeah, and, you know, Springs, the guy we saw last night was really, really good. So
I'd start him game one.
Yeah, I mean, if you could line him up, that would be the guy. And then, you know, Kluber is, you know, he's had a good season, but, you know, they've seen him twice. You know, Glasnow, we saw him, you know, coming back from Tommy John. His first time, his first time out, he pitched, Tuesday, I think. And that was his first start since 2021. So, you know, you just don't know how much length you're going to get out of him. So their rotation is a little jumbled. But, boy, when they get into that bullpen, that is a tough, tough ball club.
All right, Hoynsie, we're going to wrap up today's edition, and we will probably know more about who the opponent will be and what the rotation will look like and what Cleveland's chances are by Monday. So we'll talk to you again then and set things up for the week here on the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast.